You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Life Spa podcast. And I'm Dr. John Diard. And at Life Spa, we prove the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with modern science. And today we have a special guest, Kate O'Donnell. She's the author of the Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health book. Brand new book that just came out. I've had her on my podcast before. She wrote a book called The Everyday Ayurveda Cookbook, which is an amazing book as well. She's an incredible author, author of four books. She's also an Ayurvedic practitioner and founder of the Ayurvedic Living Institute, which is an online community space for self-transformation. Welcome, Kate. Great to see you again. This book is amazing. Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health, very much like all of your books. They're really quite amazing. And I'm super excited to talk about this book and women's health. It's a really, really important topic. What I'd like to kind of talk about is, you know, we know that 40% of women experience some type of PMS, and that's some research that I've pulled up. That might be more or less. I don't know. We've seen different studies saying different things, but I wonder if we could just dive into, you know, why is that happening? And from the Ayurvedic perspective, what do we do about that? You know, that's a massive number.
Right. Yeah. PMS is very real. So the way that we would look at that through the Ayurveda lens is that there's qualities causing the problems. So it could be that things are too hot in the body. And so that would cause a PMS related to heat, things like the person's can't sleep at night. Like you wake up sort of sweating in the middle of the night before your period comes, or you're just kind of overheated for a couple of days before the period comes. So we would say that's sort of like a pitta type of representation of PMS. We'd see headaches there, like upward moving heat moving into the head. So if we look at the body in a premenstrual state, our temperature does go up. I've been wearing a smart ring recently just to sort of see if I can learn anything new. And I am noticing that for myself, yeah, the second half of my menstrual cycle, my body temperature goes up like as much as a degree. So in a person where there's already a little heat ranging around, then that could be a problem. You know, so you might start to have all the signs of heat, or we might have signs of excessive movement, like excessive air. So it's like the air is trying to move around, and it's trying to move in a very particular direction associated with the period. And so it's like trying to like get everything together to go down. And it's, I think what happens a lot for women is energy is kind of like, there's like a little fight going on between the upward moving and the downward moving energy, because so much of our daily life is moving up and out through, you know, talking and reading and listening, and all these activities of the senses happen above the neck. So there's all this upward moving vata, which is something I've heard you talk about a lot over the years. So then all of a sudden your body goes through this period of a couple of days where it really needs to pull all the energy down. So that's where we start to get like the bloating and the back pain and the constipation. Sometimes there's a sciatic kind of representation there. So it's anything that we can do during that time to kind of allow a downward flow, where so many of the things I think we don't realize that we do on a regular basis are pulling the energy up and out. So very simple things we can do to sort of manage that movement aspect that causes problems for a lot of people. And the other manifestation of PMS we might see has to do with stagnation or like blockage. Or a, you know, like the, not necessarily because of the movement of energy, but more of a structural thing. So like the, you know, the body's trying to push the stuff out, but it can't kind of get it going. It's too slow, you know, or things are kind of stuck. And so again, in that case, it's what can we do to sort of get this downward moving flow? So what I think what's exciting about this topic, Dr. John, is there's things we can be doing all the time. Just little things that we can be doing all month long that are going to make a difference in premenstrual syndrome, which is good news.
So before we get into what we're going to do, I think what you just described, I'm just going to do a little recap. You know, the movement Movement, heat, and stagnation is basically vata, pitta, kapha, the two major body types, three major body types. And she talked about energies moving up and down. We have one that goes up, which is called prana, and the one that goes down is called apana. And when you're under a lot of stress, right, which we all are, like Kate said, everything is happening above the neck, we have way more incoming oftentimes than we can actually handle. So we borrow from Peter to pay Paul, right? The energy that goes down, the apana comes up. And like you said, that's called upward moving vata. And so you mentioned that heat can cause hot flashes, makes sense. But, you know, oftentimes where that heat comes from could be your constitution. You're just a hot person in a hot season doing hot things, eating hot food. That could be problematic. But also if you're under a lot of stress, and you have more vata, more movement, as you said, then that vata that goes down becomes like a wind that goes up and literally blows. Like, it's like taking a blow dryer and blowing, you know, air up into your digestive fire. And then it's just like bringing all this hot air into your head and, you know, all in the name of getting more energy, you can handle more stress. But at the end of the day, that creates just a lot of upward moving vata, which creates upward moving heat, because heat rises. That's what it wants to do. And then there's nobody home to have a healthy, normal, balanced cycle. And so that is such a beautiful description of it. And Ayurveda deals with it in such a logical way, right? So what do we do for, you know, you said there's some things we can do, you know, throughout the month. I'd love to hear what those are. So I'm sure everybody would.
Yeah. Thanks for that explanation. I think that we see not only with the menstrual cycle, but also for our listeners who are experiencing perimenopause symptoms, it tends to take on that same pattern of the wind blowing on the flame, right? So the first thing we want to kind of do is turn down the hair dryer, turn down the blow dryer, right? So the question is, how do we do that? And one of the things I recommend a lot is I call it a sense break. So sort of what happens for most of us is once we start moving in our daily life, we're just fair game for everything that's coming at us. So all day long, we're just mentally active, you know, potentially physically active as well. So we have that vata time of day from 2 in the afternoon until 6 p.m. It's like a very potent time to administer some sort of help for this wind that kind of is kicked up during that time. So one thing I try to get people to consider is, can we rest the senses at some point between 2 and 6? We're usually like, we've been already working, let's say, since 9 or 9 o'clock in the morning. So a sense break doesn't have to be a big deal. You know, it can be like a 5-minute thing that we just, like, if someone's at a desk in an office, they can just kind of look out the window and set an alarm on the phone, you know, for a couple of minutes and just kind of attune the senses to the movement of clouds outside, you know, or watching a squirrel or a bird, you know, or anything of nature. So I feel like nature has that ability to bring the rhythm back into our natural cycles, just to attune to it instead of all the other things that are going on that tends to feel a little overwhelming. Another thing I'll recommend is like legs up the wall posture. So if people, you know, have the ability to take 10 minutes and kind of lie on the floor and put their legs up, that's also going to really change the movements of energy in the body. And during that time, I'll recommend if people can find like an eye cover, which I'll usually recommend a sock, like grab a sock and put it over your eyes. And then again, just set the alarm on the phone for 10 minutes. And if the phone is too alluring, I'll encourage people to buy one of those egg timers. You know, those little ones you use for the hard-boiled egg. Because some people, I think once they pick up their phone, it can be all over if there's notifications coming through. So like legs up the wall with a sock over the eyes, or just simply kind of looking out the window, or even like a walk, you know, just kind of like coming away from the workspace or the attentive space, whatever we're attending to. If we can just attune to nature, that's something I think that's very doable for people. I think some people it's hard to kind of imagine lying down with a sock on the eyes in the middle of the day. But what I've found is all, you know, all these years of working with clients is that people, they notice a huge difference from even a 5 or 10 minute break in the afternoon. because it just allows everything to kind of settle down. And then your energy is naturally going to want to sort of return to its home, you know, so that apana, that downward moving flow, is just naturally going to start to move back in that direction if we give it a chance.
You know, I love that. What if we did something like legs up the tree instead of the wall? And the reason why I say that, as you're I've never thought of this before, but as you're talking, I think it's so cool. But during that 2 to 6 time of day, which is the Vata time of day, where we're more vulnerable to aggravation and worry and stress and eat chocolate and coffee and that kind of thing to get out of that hole, mm-hmm. we feel like we're in, taking a rest, like you said, is so cool. But also, if you go outside, if you just go outside in the sun, you're lying in UV radiation, which is actually the radiation that heats the body up and actually creates evaporation and creates wind and actually creates vata between 2 and 6 in the afternoon. That is actually the frequency of light that actually creates vata. But the frequency of light that actually balances vata is actually red and infrared light, particularly infrared light. So if you're under a tree, the tree leaves, particularly in the summer, blocks all the UV radiation. And if you go online and Google infrared light tree, and you'll see this tree exploding with infrared light, because with infrared photography, you can see the actual light. And when you're lying under a tree with your legs up, like you said, you're literally, each leaf is blasting and reflecting all that infrared light into your body, literally balancing your vata. So don't go for a necessarily walk in the sun, go for a walk in a forest or legs up a tree or meditate or whatever under a tree. So you get that beautiful blasting literally of this infrared warming kind of vata balancing, soothing light, which would be just another way of amping up that benefit. But I totally get it. You know, when I first got into practice, when I teach it, I always say the first thing you want to ask your patients is, how do you feel between 2 and 6 in the afternoon, right?
Yep.
And if they feel like, then we know that this is going to be a predisposition to aggravating whatever their weak link is. And if your menstrual cycle is your weak link, or your anxiety is your weak link, or whatever, that stress can be, particularly if it's cumulative day after day after day, can push it over the edge, which is amazing. Are there any other things that we can do to, women can do to kind of protect themselves from PMS?
I think any kind of breathing practice, which is also something I know you share a lot about, and it can be done also at any time of day, and it doesn't have to be a long one. But because vata is born of air and wind, and the breath is the wind, if we can kind of get into a rhythmic breath for, say, you know, a minute or 2 minutes or something like that, that will, again, create that ideal circumstance for the vata, for the winds to return to their natural movements. One of the things I've had to do in my own body, because I do have a good amount of the upward moving activity in my constitution, so I've really had to learn to move energy down. I'm very much a practitioner of subtle arts, you know, 25 years of yoga practice, and do a lot of breathing techniques. The one I've landed on most recently in this conversation is very simple, like a Samavritti Ujjayi, which is just an even inhale and exhale breath. I feel like that's very accessible for most people. So if a person can, even while lying in bed, for example, kind of inhale and count to 4, and then exhale and count to 4, and just do that, say, 5 times. You can use the fingers to count. You kind of bring like the thumb and first finger together, 1, thumb and middle finger, 2, you know, and you just go through sort of 5 of those very even breaths. What people will find is maybe an erratic nature to either the breath itself, right? Like it's ragged, or either the inhale or the exhale is sort of difficult, or it's hard to get them to be the same length. Or they'll notice the mind, like that they can't focus for 5 breaths. Because the mind is moving, because the mind is also composed of air elements, according to Ayurveda. So it's also this system that is always moving that I do think causes a lot of problems for us. So if we can get the breath even, we're also getting the mind even, and we are actually also getting the hormones into a more even state It's like we create this, what I'm calling essential balance, which in Ayurveda is the balance of lunar and solar qualities. So the lunar is that which is kind of soft and quiet and more inward dwelling. And the solar energy is that which is active and moving and very excited and passionate. And we want both of these things, but we want them to be in a state of balance. And I do find in my practice that it's the imbalance of these two aspects of our essential nature that is responsible for a lot of the PMS, is that we're maybe too active too much of the time. And that when we are resting, we're actually kind of crashing. We're not really in a rejuvenative state. And so if we can come into practices that happen, let's say for 5 or 10 minutes every day or most days throughout the month, where we create that rejuvenative space, then the body doesn't crash when we're approaching the period or during the period. And some women crash right after the period as well. We want the period to be kind of a smooth experience that doesn't create so many of the ups and downs emotionally as well as physically. And so this Sama Vritti Ujjayi, Sama means sort of equal or even. And Vritti is a fluctuation of our energy. So we're trying to even out the fluctuations of our energy body. I really feel like that is a key. And it's a skill that we have to learn how to do. And so this very just count to four, inhale, count to four, exhale is something I find works and is kind of like, it's not too fancy. You know, yeah. You can lie in bed and do it.
Yeah. You know, I love this. As you keep talking, I just keep thinking of things like, you know, that question, you know, do you feel like your life is a struggle? Do you feel like you, at the end of the day, you're exhausted and spent, you know? And, yeah. And I think that might be a good signpost for folks. Like if one thing is your menstrual cycle, but the other thing is like, or how do you feel at the end of your day? If you look outside and look at nature, look at the squirrels and the deer, they're not struggling. I mean, they're very chill, extremely chill. You know, you would imagine that we at one point in our evolution were also somewhat chill and connected to those rhythms and lived to survive. You'd have to be in those rhythms, you know, but we've taken ourselves out of those rhythms. And I think that might be a good question for folks to say, well, you know, what do I do with my lifestyle? Because people say, I'm not stressed, I feel fine. But, you know, how do you feel at the end of the day? Do you live for the weekends? Do you need that cup of coffee to get up in the morning? Do you need that glass of wine in the afternoon, in the evening to settle down? That means your life is, you know, a struggle. And that struggle is going to borrow from Peter to pay Paul and set you up for, particularly when your body creates a cycle, menstrual cycle, which is like a minor miracle every month. You know, that's taking a lot of energy. So when you take a lot of energy out of the body, you're going to find out where the rubber meets the road, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's absolutely beautiful what you're saying. You know, the breaths that you said, I think is perfect advice. And the fact that, you know, this is an insidious issue because it's our culture to be going 90 miles an hour. And we have to recognize that we are, you know, in a way, out of sorts, you know, and right. We can get that calm back. You know, let's talk about fertility for a second. You know, one study showed that, I think it was, there was a book called Countdown, which was a book about fertility. And she cited a study where from 1960 to 2015, the fertility rates declined by 50% in America. And that's not just for women only, 20 to 70% of that was for men with low sperm count. So it's happening to everybody, but we're talking about women here. What's the story Ayurvedically? I mean, it's probably somewhat similar, some similar ideas, but I wonder if there's anything else you can add about fertility.
Yes, fertility, according to Ayurvedic texts, the sort of the enemy of fertility is heat. Is excessive heat. I always remember, like when we were in health class, in sex ed, they would sort of teach the boys not to wear the tight pants. The idea was that you want to like kind of keep the scrotal sac cool, right, and not overheat it. You know, so that makes so much sense. And so the Ayurveda texts are also sort of warning against excessive heat factor. Because the nature of our reproductive juices, like and the components that build eggs and that build sperm are cool. and soft and fluid, sort of milk-like, and have very similar qualities to the lunar energy or like moonlight. You know, so moonlight can feed fertility, whereas that, as you're saying, that sunlight, those UV rays are the ones that sort of reduce the strength of the body. So when a body is not at its ideal strength, the first thing that will suffer, according to Ayurveda, is the fertility factor, because it's sort of like the furthest along the hierarchy of how the body cares for the different tissues. So one of the things I'm seeing, I think we're all seeing, is that the stress hormones in the bloodstream are heating. Like they create heat, adrenaline especially. So even something like drinking coffee and squeezing the adrenals does kind of create a little extra heat in the body. If that's something that's happening all the time, or we're in a state of stress all the time, so there's cortisol moving around the body. These things are the enemy of fertility, hormonally speaking. It creates too much of that heating and drying that will literally dry out the nutritive factor that we need to create eggs and to create sperm and for them to live in a very soft and cool and liquid environment. So back to what you're saying, culturally, we live in this solar leaning environment where it's sort of activity and productivity are most important. It's like one of the questions I'll ask my people is, you know, when's the last time you were rewarded and everybody gave you a big standing ovation for like lying around on the floor? You know, we don't get rewarded for that kind of activity, but I do think that we need more of that. Because when you're just kind of rolling around on the floor, hanging out, being chill, as you say, that's when a body is going to be like, ooh, it's fertility time. You know, like we've got space, we've got time, and we've got the elements that we need to create new bodies. Like this one's happy and juicy. Now we can make a new one. Whereas if a body is in a state of feeling like there's potentially a problem, you know, or an imbalance brewing, that it's like all hands on deck. We need to bring all resources towards the survival of this organism. The organism is not going to prioritize the fertility component. So it's maybe we're too busy, you know, maybe we're too stressed out. Maybe we're just kind of thinking too much in this reflexive way where we're not even aware that we're thinking, you know, because if we look at a womb is space, you know, it's just a space at the center of the body. And I feel that we need to create space in our outward life that then is sort of mirrored in the center of the body. And then the body feels that there's that sense of spaciousness in which to create, you know, something new.
Wow, beautiful. I remember my daughter, she was in a high school where she did a lot of service work, and she was down in the Copper Canyon in Mexico and at the Tarahumara with all the drug cartels next door. It was crazy. But she came back and she was like, "Dad, you know, they sit around all day. They open up the gate in the morning for the goats, and then they close it in the afternoon for the goats. And they basically play guitar all day long. Like they're not working hard, but they're having a wonderful life. I mean, they're just connecting and singing, and then they eat a little, and then but somehow they figured out, and they're off the grid completely, really. You know, they figured out how to really enjoy life. And I think that's such a big takeaway here. We took it infertility or PMS, or these are circadian rhythms, biological clocks turning off and turning on based on rhythms of nature. And if we're out of whack with those rhythms of nature, bad things happen for all of us, really. You know, and there you talk about the seasons of life as well in your book. And we know that, you know, for women in the early 40s, their testosterone sort of starts to decline. The thinking is that you're getting ready for menopause, so why do you need libido, right? You know, testosterone is providing libido, so why do you need that? So that goes down first. And then progesterone follows, and then estrogen follows. So sort of all these hormones start to decline, and sort of nature's got to get way of, after we leave our reproductive years, nature's got to get away getting rid of us because we're not functional, really. So I wonder if you could, you know, kind of dive into those cycles, those seasons of life and how those hormones change and maybe what we could do for, you know, the testosterone cycle and the progesterone cycle and the estrogen cycle, because everybody's all about HRT and bioidentical and all that. And is it good? Is it bad? And I guess that's probably a good question to start. Is the bioidentical good? Are those hormones really good or are they actually bad? And what can we do ayurvedically for those cycles when we start losing those hormones sequentially?
Yeah, I am having this conversation all the time right now, Dr. John, like it with my friends. I'm 45, yeah, right. You know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a lot of friends who are considering using hormones or they already are. And the question of are they, you know, bad for us? I don't know that we know that yet. I don't know that we've had enough time. And I think that the drugs are always changing. Do you have anything to add on that? Like, I know you follow the research a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the bioidentical, I think you're right. It's a little bit too early to tell. People should know that bioidentical isn't 100% botanical or natural. It's half synthetic and half botanical based. So it's not really 100%. We know that the full-on synthetic ones were significantly problematic. You know, they were, you know, cancer-causing and significantly an issue. So the question is half botanical and half synthetic 100% better than 100% synthetic, which we know is bad? So, you know, I'm always just a big fan of trying to figure out, can we actually give you, you know, hormonal precursors as botanical medicines to support the body's ability to get that and do the things we're talking about, you know, get the body to relax, calm the body down so the body can reset itself, give the body the precursors it needs, fill the pantry with the ingredients to make hormones with, and then you can kind of hopefully move that needle without having to go to something so extreme, which is really, you know, messing with an amazingly elaborate system of feedback loops of hormones and neurotransmitters. And you start going in there and it's a lot, you know,
right?
Whether you end up 100% better, you feel better a little bit, but you know, in Western medicine, there's always consequences, which we call side effects, which are what they show on TV when they show the drug commercials, right? On the pretty screen, on the pretty beach, but then they hopefully you're not listening to the side effects, you know? But there are going to be consequences, and you have to determine at some point whether the consequences are actually, you know, less important than the benefit you're going to get from the medication or the drug, which there always will be benefit, but there will be consequences. You have to weigh all that out.
Right. So where I'm standing on this question right now is, I think what is a bad idea is to rely on supplementing hormones only and then just going about our business and doing things the way we've been doing them as the body enters into these changes in its composition. Literally, the elemental composition of our body is changing. And it's, as you said, supposed to be, because we are moving into a time of life where our function and our focus moves away from the procreation, I'll say sort of the creation of new bodies. And instead, we can move into roles of mentorship, let's say, or caring for bodies that already exist rather than creating new ones. You know, it's not to say we don't have a function or we don't have, you know, some utility in culture. I think elders, one of the things I'd love to see reformed is the way that we look at aging and that we treat the elderly. That's another conversation, I think, my next book for sure.
Yeah.
But it's, what I'm seeing a lot of is we're just going for the pharmaceutical answer to the symptoms that we're experiencing in perimenopause and menopause. So in that period of time, let's say during the sort of mid to late 40s, where women start to experience changes and symptoms, that's what we're calling perimenopause. So it's like they're still having periods, they might be becoming irregular, but that's when we'll see the hot flashes. The air element and the fire element are sort of undergoing changes as the elemental composition of the body changes due to the sort of hormone intelligence shifting as it's supposed to. So I think we're moving into culturally into a space where we're not viewing perimenopause and menopause as like a disease, that it's natural. You know, I was really driven to work on this book and put this book into the world because I wanted to create a conversation around how these changes in the body are natural and they are supposed to happen. So one of the questions I'll ask is, are we using the hormones in order to continue to keep life the same at a time when it's supposed to be changing? You know, so like, for example, a woman's exercise regimen, it should shift. It should change, right? The way that we approach building of the body should be shifting during this sort of liminal time while the hormones are undergoing, let's say, exponential changes, right? Between 45 to 50, and then sort of again, let's say around 50 and to 4 or 5 years, that's where the change in the estrogen is sort of quantum compared to what we started to experience, let's say, back in our late 30s. So we're experiencing quantum changes. That is, I would say, never fun, like, and never easy, you know? And it's something that we want to manage our daily life in such a way that we are creating some, let's say, touchstones, rhythms, routines, circadian rhythms that really stabilize and ground the system. If we're doing that, we're going to see an easier time of undergoing changes. So let's say things like when people eat their meals or when they go to bed or when they wake up, these times of day, sort of these points along our 24-hour cycle, if we can get some consistency there, and it doesn't have to be perfect, as you say yourself, Dr. John, the 80-20 rule, right? So if people can sort of follow the rhythm 80% of the time, that creates this bedrock for the system, where we can, then when the changes are happening, the body at least can sort of rest in these rhythms. That creates a rejuvenative and resting space. Where what I'm seeing is instead, it's like we're turning a blind eye to all of the tools and rhythms that are available to us during our daily life and just taking the pharmaceutical. And I don't feel that that's a good way to go about it, because that vata and that pitta, which are undergoing all these movements and all these changes, again, due to the hormonal matrix naturally shifting as it's supposed to, if those doshas just kind of continue doing what they're doing and we just take drugs to not notice the symptoms, as you say, rob Peter to pay Paul, like there will be a price later on. At some point, the imbalances that have been going on with vata, and Ayurveda texts are very clear that menopause is a movement into the vata time of life. And so that vata starts to really become something we want to learn more about and learn how to manage that and live well with that sort of increasing in the body. And if we're learning these tools and practicing these tools, and we're still using some hormones for a period of time because the quantum changes are causing symptoms that are making it, let's say, difficult for a woman to keep up with her, what she needs to do, you know, with her daily life, or the pain, like a lot of my colleagues are experiencing sort of pain in the joints right now, you know, and if that's the kind of thing, I'm not saying women need to live in pain, you know, and suck it up and learn circadian rhythms. I think there can also be like a stopgap period of time if women really can't manage, where they use a supplementation if the herbs aren't working. So we've kind of already tried to create, you know, put everything on the plate that the body wants in order to create these hormones and make sure that the full nutrition is there and the body's able to assimilate the nutrition. If all that's already been done, we're already working that. Like, I'll love for a woman to sort of give me 6 months to a year before you start taking the hormones. Let's try the Ayurvedic approach for a while and see if we can sort of create that bedrock and get all the food on the plate that the body wants to eat and really get that metabolism working and that digestion working. So all of the elements that we need are getting where we need them. I think that's part of the problem sometimes as well, is the digestion. Potentially, we can take all the herbs we want, but if the digestive system isn't able to really metabolize and assimilate what we need, that can create some imbalances itself. So if we're doing all that, let's say for 6 months to a year, and still the woman kind of can't, like the symptoms are just beyond what she's able to handle, then what if we used a hormonal supplement for a year and a half or 2 years, not for a long time. I think that's when we might start to see some danger down the road from taking these things for a long time. That's sort of how I'm approaching it now. I think we should check in again in 5 years when I've gone through all this myself too, to see what the experience is like. But I'm already using herbal precursors like ashwagandha, shatavari, chaste berry. Like I've already been working with those things since I was probably around 40. Notice a difference right away. As soon as my period starts to get irregular or my ovulation starts to get irregular, for me, chaste tree, Vitex, they'll call it in the sort of herbal world, that has always been an ally for my body. Anytime I get irregularity in my menstrual cycle, I use the chaste tree. And for me, it's worked. So it's like, if we can sort of find that ally for each person's body and get them on sort of whatever the herbs are that are needed, it works. It absolutely works. And the sooner we start catching the imbalance, like I'd love, let's get some 35-year-olds listening, you know, like whoever's out there, who's in their late 30s, early 40s, really that's the time. That's the best time. The earlier we start learning to notice the imbalances and getting all that food on the plate, potentially doing some seasonal cleanse routine, you know, to optimize digestion and absorption. We get all these things rolling, and we're going to see a lot less of a drastic experience in perimenopause and menopause. I think things will be a lot smoother. What we are seeing a lot is it's just kind of coming up and hitting people upside the head at age 49, you know, and then we haven't developed the tools. We haven't developed the rhythms. Their circadian rhythms. And so suddenly we're in this sort of state of a deep discomfort and imbalance. Meanwhile, we're trying to figure out when to go to bed and when to wake up and what to eat and when to eat. And it's like, it's too much all at once, I think, for a lot of people. So this is where, again, supplementation might help people just get back to enough of an even keel that they can sort of move forward in creating these healthy rhythms and in getting all of the nutrition that we need for balance. And there's certain qualities that bodies want at this time. You know, as we approach menopause, we need more earth and water elements. That's what's disappearing. So we need more of this like ushy gushy. We need our good oils, and we need to be able to digest them in our food. We need sort of like milk-like and unctuous substances. Like I love the licorice, the slippery elm, the chia seeds. I talk about demulcents a good bit in this book as a place to sort of create the moisture and the internal tissues that we do start to lose as we are in menopause. And it's that loss of moisture, I think, for a lot of women that causes a lot of discomfort, like in the tissues and joints, changes in the skin, you know, dryness and vaginal dryness. There's so many different ways that we see this dry quality making problems. So I'll approach that from the, can we get good fats in the diet and digest them well? And can we get some demulcents going? Yeah, because I do think that those create a nice sort of sliminess that opposes all the heat that we're cooking up with our stress situations.
Yeah. I mean, you know, mud under a lot of heat gets very, very hard.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happens to our mucous membranes. They literally dry out. Our tissues dry. As we get older, we wrinkle, right? That doesn't necessarily have to happen, but it's definitely a thing. You mentioned some really cool herbs, and ashwagandha, a great herb. And you think about that one from a point of view of handling the stress and mitigating the upward moving vata, but it's also one of the natural precursors to testosterone. So that depletion of testosterone happens in the 40s. Ashwagandha is a good, you know, mitigator for that. Chaste berry, you know, it's a hormonal hormonizer, but it's also the most powerful precursor to progesterone. And the one hormone in our body that converts directly into stress hormone is progesterone. So if you're under a lot of stress, tired at the end of your day, you know, all the things that Kate has mentioned as the indicators of stress, then you're probably robbing some of your progesterone. So you're going into your transition without that hormone in place. So chaste berry or Vitex is a great precursor for that. Wonderful. And then shatavari, means a woman with 100 husbands. It's a precursor to not only estrogen, but also progesterone. People think it's only estrogenic, but it's actually both progestogenic as well. And that can kind of carry you through your entire reproductive career as a woman. But those three herbs, I think, are wonderful, and women should know about those for sure, because that's a great way to get ahead of the curve, because you can't wait until, you know, it happens. It's like they always say, when you're going to try to capture a crocodile, you don't, tackle it while it's in the water, while it's like hungry hunting. You wait for it to come onto the land, fall asleep, and then you throw a rope around it, you know, like wait for this thing to sleep, get it while it's sleeping. But when it's like in full bloom, it gets a little harder to fix, right? Right. So anyway, I love that. You mentioned some really just beautiful description about the lunar cycle. And I'd love for you to just dive into the lunar cycle and the different phases of the lunar cycle and what happens in different phases of the lunar cycle and what happens in different phases of the menstrual cycle and the reproductive cycle. And that's such fascinating information. I wish you could just dive into that for a bit.
Oh, I love, yes, this conversation is, in my 20s, I lived on Maui. So I lived in the middle of the ocean and I lived on a porch. So I was outdoors. The moons there, like the full moons there, were so intense. Yeah, I would just not sleep. Yeah, for like 3 days, I'd barely sleep. It was just like a waking dream state all night long. And we lived over this gulch and you could hear the waves crashing, you know, when the moon was full. And the new moon would come around and it would be like sleep time. I'd have like 5 days of just amazing sleeps, you know, and quietude. And you wouldn't hear that sound of waves crashing. And it's, as we look at how, especially women's bodies, all bodies, everything of nature is affected by the moon, the literally the gravitational pull of the moon sort of pulls water element towards the surface of the planet. So that's why the tide gets bigger. So we have this high tide that time of year or that time of month where the tide literally is going to come up a few feet more, right? So there's like more water moving. So that's happening in our bodies as well, like more water moving, right? It was more moisture moving when the moon is full. And traditionally speaking, it seems like women as sort of, you know, part of a tribe will all menstruate together and usually around the new moon. And then around the full moon is when we see because again, the moisture component lends itself towards fertility. And that moisture that creates the genetic components of eggs and sperm and all the juices. So that all the juices are rising, just like the tide is rising. And the biodynamic farmers are planting their plants at the full moon because there'd be more moisture in the soil, right? So the baby plants are getting more moisture. So everything in the cosmos is affected. And it's such an amazing, magical mystery, you know, that women's bodies are sort of moving in this rhythmic way with the moon. And I'll notice a lot that for a lot of women will sort of shift towards bleeding, having the period when the moon is full in the summertime, and then move into a new moon cycle in the winter. And so it does change. One of the things I'm wary of is this conversation. Women will start to feel like, oh no, there's something wrong that I'm not menstruating at around the new moon, but it's not necessary, right? It's not always that linear at all. But what we do have is a cycle that's 28 days, give or take. And so that's the cycle of the moon as it moves through the waxing moon, which is when we move towards a bigger moon. So it's getting waxing means it's getting bigger. We're moving towards full moon and then it wanes. So as it wanes, we're moving towards the new moon. So that causes changes in the doshas. So the way that the Ayurveda texts talk about the cycle, the menstrual cycle, is according to doshas. So there's like a vata, pitta, kapha time of the cycle. So the period itself is the vata time that very much is characterized by movement. And it's apana, as you said, apana is that subset of vata that's moving and moving down. And then that waxing moon, or the first 2 weeks of the cycle, which is what we would call that's the phase where we're building the fertility. So the body is sort of getting that egg ripe. And then over the course of the 2 weeks, we move towards ovulation. And that's like the moon is getting bigger. And then the full moon is sort of the time where we ovulate. And that is the time where the fertility factor is there. And that whole 2 week period is considered a cuppa phase, like a cuppa time. And that's like, could be 12 days, it could be 10 days, it could be as many as 14 days. It's usually somewhere in the middle there between, let's say, 10 and 14 days that the body is waxing. So that cuppa, all the qualities of cuppa, the moisture, the building of tissue, that all is growing during that first 2 weeks or so of the cycle. After ovulation, we move into where the estrogen is checked by progesterone. So the body's no longer building that endometrial lining. It kind of, progesterone comes in and says, let's stop doing that now, right? The egg is not fertilized, so we're going to start the cycle again. So it's the progesterone that's a little bit warmer than estrogen. And so it kind of comes in and stops the building, allows the endometrial lining to mature, and then the body will then shed during the vata time. All that vata comes online to do the shedding. But the pitta time of the cycle is that progesterone time where we're doing the cooking, we could say the cooking of the endometrial lining, right? So we get it ready to the point where it's ready for its next phase, which is the shedding. So we go through this kuppa time and this pitta time. That's why women will notice that they may not tolerate hot substances like alcohol or spicy food or things like that towards the second half of the cycle. As we move towards the period, women might notice like loose stools, kind of that pitta quality starts to come into the poop. So we'll see like more as we get closer, we'll see more of a hot, acrid, or maybe even like a acidic smelling and qualities come into the stool. The BO changes. We'll notice that things kind of get a little more acrid, a little more acidic, a little more smelly as we get closer to the period. And all these things are because of the pitta. The sort of pitta is most active in the body at that time. So one of the things Ayurveda would teach us is to sort of move in this through this cycle, through the monthly cycle, being aware that we can sort of enjoy the building qualities of kuppa during the first 2 weeks of the cycle. And that's the time where I'll recommend moving towards like a full moon celebration, you know, so where we move into that ovulation time, it's like celebration time, it's creation time. It's a great time to sort of be like building new ideas. Women will have more energy. So they'll feel more like, yay, I'm going to exercise more. I definitely notice this personally. I'm all about it. I'm all about like, yeah, let me do that extra, you know, 5-10 minutes of cardio or whatever it is. And we'll find in our work, in our relationships, in our exercise, all these things that everything's like a little more easy and full and there's more energy. And that's because that kuppa is active in the body. So it's just such a great time to look at like a monthly cycle and say, I'm going to kind of go bigger during these 2 months when nature's going big. And then in that second half of the month is the time where things are going to start to gradually slow down as we approach the period. Things will feel a little hotter, potentially a little drier. We might get tired more easily. And as we get closer to the period, every day you get closer to the period, we'll notice this more. You know, that we just tire a little bit more easily or sooner, and that we don't tolerate heat as well. And we may not tolerate stress as well either. You know, people might just start to feel overwhelmed by things that 2 weeks ago were like, woohoo, fun, you know, yeah, let's go get them. And it's what I love about this way of looking at the lunar cycle is that there's so many things we experience in our mind, in our moods, in our energy, in our digestion that are absolutely natural. It's just the flow of nature. So it's like, oh my God, why am I tired? It's like, well, you're supposed to be, you know? So it's for those who have some ability to even manage the schedule, it's like in that week before the menstrual cycle, we could just take out a thing or two, you know, or add a little bit less or expect a little bit less, you know, productivity and a little more sort of inward dwelling or more of these sense breaks that we've been talking about, you know? And just kind of really dropping into the rhythms. Like one of the things, when PMS is a problem for a woman, I'll start by saying, can we just focus on the week before you get your period? Like, you don't have to be perfect and do all the things all month long. Let's just look at this week before your period, when we know that you're going to be a little more tired, a little more less resilient to stress. Like, we want to kind of just dial everything down a notch during that week. And if she's having things like headaches or excessive heat or like the pitta type poops, if those things start to happen, I might even say, can we take some of the hot foods out of the diet that week, or maybe drink, you know, can we have like a dry week the week before we get our period where we don't drink wine? That in itself causes a huge change in PMS symptoms. I see it pretty much every time. If we cannot have those who drink alcohol, you know, sort of regularly, if they don't do that for a week, it's kind of night and day. So a lot of the, just the awareness of where am I in my lunar cycle? You know, am I in the building phase, or am I in the sort of letting go, shedding phase? And then while we have the period, is just such a fantastic time to rest. So, you know, I think a lot of women have put a lot of energy and feel very motivated and inspired by a regular workout regimen, which is fantastic. It's great to feel strong. You know, I think the older we get, the more important that is. And when we're bleeding, when we have that period, that is not the time to try to build. The body does not want to build. That kappa is not most active. It's the time the body wants to get rid of things. So I'll also suggest we could even it's a great time for journaling or introspective activity where you just kind of step back and look at, oh, you know, like what's been going on this month? Are there some things here, you know, that may like energy places I'm putting my energy that are making me tired? Like, can I let go of anything? And what do I want to plant seeds for in the next lunar cycle as that full moon is coming? You know, what do I want to be manifesting? So I feel like that period is it's such a potent time for sort of taking stock of our life, our direction, our energy, and also redirecting our energy if necessary. Such a cool time. And just to say again that when we use this lens and look at, say, a month, because Ayurveda, I think a lot of our listeners may have already heard of daily routines and seasonal routines. And now I'm saying, hey, like we've also got this monthly rhythm that if we kind of row the boat along with the stream of what's happening when the moon is waxing and when the moon is waning, even for those who don't menstruate, still that cycle is there affecting the body. So many of the changes that we undergo over the course of a month in our energy, our moods, our digestion, sleep, so many of those things then just make sense. I think we can just sort of say, oh, you know, and rest around it instead of trying to fix it or wondering what's wrong. Just sort of rest in that these rhythms are causing these changes. And this too will also just shift in a couple days or a week.
Yeah, amazing. Just a reminder, everybody, we're talking about the book, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health by Kate O'Donnell. Kate, you're an amazing writer. I love your books. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. I encourage everybody to get this book. Any last tips you can give everyone about women's health and also how they can get a hold of you?
I would say, like, sort of parting words is just we can remember that all this, so many things are natural. So many of these changes are natural, you know, that we undergo. The bodies that have the ovaries and the uterus undergo very particular and somewhat predictable changes over the course of a lifetime. And if we also zoom out and look at where we are in the lifetime, it's so enlightening and really very stress reducing to just say, oh yeah, I'm at that point in my life. And so that's why this is true right now. And that is how I live my life. And I find it really a real place of solace and beauty to live that way. So that's kind of what I want for our listeners. And people can find me. I have all sorts of courses. Some of them are on demand. Some of them are live. I'm active a lot in my community membership. Everything is at ayurvedicliving.institute. And I am definitely here to help people live the routines that I'm talking about in the book, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health. So thanks so much for talking with me about this today. And I love it. Yeah.
Thank you, Kate. Good luck with your book and all your next books to come as well. I'm sure we'll be talking about those soon. All right. Thanks so much for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute and tell you what we do here at LifeSpa.com. You know, I've been in practice now for 40 years, 38 of them have been practicing Ayurvedic medicine full time. For the last 20 years, I've been writing articles and doing videos on the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with the modern science. You know, if something's been around for 1,000 years, still practiced today, and you have modern science to prove it, boy, I really feel like that's something we should all be taking a look at. And that's what we do at LifeSpa.com. And all that information is for free. So you just go to LifeSpa.com and search in your health topic, and you'll get the information, the article that you need, hopefully that will help you. While you're there, check out our Ayurvedic store. You can get there through LifeSpa.com or go to store.lifespa.com. And there we have all of our organic Ayurvedic herbs, organic skincare line, more books, tapes, knowledge that we give you is all there at our store. All of our cleansing kits are there in our store. All of our herbs are whole herbs with the natural occurring microbiome, the way it came out of the soil. And that's critically important, because if I took the bugs out of you, you'd be completely different. We take the bugs away from a plant, like sterilizing and making an extract or spraying your food with pesticides, you lose significant benefit of that plant. And that's why we use the whole plant with the natural occurring microbiome. So check us out, learn more about what we're doing here at LifeSpa.com, and we'll see you again.
This recording is brought to you by LifeSpa, where ancient Ayurvedic wisdom meets modern science. Get access to free health video newsletters by Dr. John at LifeSpa.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.